And he said, okay, very good. I'll take 144 bottles. Grocery stores are used to big quantities. And I'm sitting, I've got 24 bottles left. And I said, would you settle on 24? That's the only time in my life I've ever talked somebody down in an order, not up.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first ever episode of the Ken Brailsford Podcast. My name is Casey Moss, and I recently sat down with Ken for a series of interviews to get to know him better and to ask him very direct questions about his 45-plus year experience in the network marketing industry. Some of the things that we cover in these episodes are the things that he's seen that help people become successful, also some of the things that would guarantee their failure. We also explored his history as a serial entrepreneur, and the things that have made him successful, and the things that you could do to duplicate that in your own life. So sit back and enjoy this first interview with the one and only Ken Brailsford. Hi, Ken. How are you?
Oh, I'm very good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Glad to have you here.
Thank you.
Thanks for taking the time to be able to expand and tell people a little bit about your story and about what brought you to this point and what made you who you are. You've been in network marketing for 45 years. You want to tell a little bit about that story?
Well, I'd been in the military prior to that and I'd never thought about nutritional products or anything like that at the time. Just that when I got out of the military, I needed to do something to earn a living. And the whole family was gathered together 2 or 3 months after I got home. And they said, why don't we pool our money and start a business? And I've always been somewhat business-oriented, so that was intriguing to me. And I said, why not? And we decided, we had $150 per family. There's 7 families. That's all, $1,050. We pooled it, then we didn't know what to do with the business. And one of my wife's aunts said, why don't we put cayenne pepper in a capsule?
Really?
And yeah, and it was a crazy thing. And I thought, well, it probably wouldn't cost much to test it and see if it would work.
Well, let's go back. Okay. You guys were probably thinking that really is crazy.
Well, everybody thought this is a crazy thing. I mean, nobody's heard of putting herbs in capsules. The only thing closest it got to is that some people in those days would buy empty capsules, gelatin capsules, buy bulk herbs and fill them themselves, but that's very cumbersome and not a very efficient way to get your own nutritional products.
Okay.
And the hippies in particular were doing that in the 60s and early 70s. So that's, where that came from. But the reason I said to Christine, who had that idea, I said, why would we want to put herbs in capsules before I even thought? I mean, I first thought it was crazy, but then I asked her, why would we want to do that? She said her husband, Gene, a number of years ago, had bleeding ulcers and had to go to the hospital for surgery. When he was released, the doctor said to him, well, Gene, I'll see you back in a few years for more surgery. And that kind of depressed Gene. And he wanted a clarification. The doctor says, well, all we did is fix the ulcers, but we haven't fixed the cause.
Okay.
You're going to still have problems probably and probably need further surgery in a few years again. So Gene went home depressed and was moping around. A neighbor came by and who is into herbs, but not encapsulated herbs, just the herb powder, and said, what's the matter, Gene? She related the story, and she said, Gene, there's an easy solution to your bleeding ulcers. You've had the surgery now, and the way to keep it from ever recurring is take a teaspoon of cayenne pepper every day and just take it straight, and you'll never have ulcers again.
Wow.
Well, Gene had been doing that every day since then. Never had bleeding ulcers, even to this day he's never had bleeding ulcers. But obviously, any of you that have tried hot cayenne pepper in raw, natural state knows that it's very hot in the mouth.
It's a little bit hot as it goes down.
Definitely hot as it goes down. But he had been doing it. He was faithful to that. His wife at that point, when she related the story, said, for every gene that's out there, there's probably 1,000 or more people that would rather die than take cayenne pepper like that. And she says, I'm one of them. So therefore, why don't we put them in capsules and then nobody can taste the hot cayenne pepper? And so we thought, okay, let's give it a try. And we went out, bought 3 pounds of cayenne pepper, 3,000 gelatin capsules, 30 bottles, so we could put 100 capsules per bottle, and printed some simple illegal labels. We didn't know what was required on the label at the time, other than the name and how many capsules were there. Sat down around Gene and Christine's kitchen table, which is a big round table, and started to fill those capsules with
cayenne.
So you
just dumped a big pile on the middle
end? Dumped
it
there, and with our hand just separated the capsules, filled them, put them back together. And it wasn't very long in that process that your nose was running, your eyes were burning, your hands were stained red. And, you know, this is not the most ideal way of doing this, but we stuck to it and persevered, filled 30 bottles, and then we had to see if there was a market. And so Gene and I took the 30 bottles. He was driving a little Volkswagen at that time, Beetle. And we drove down to the nearest health food store, the only one we knew that existed at the time. And Gene was not a salesman. He said, "You'd be the salesman." And I said, "Okay."
Now, you hadn't been a salesman before either, had you?
Well, I tried real estate. I couldn't sell real estate because I thought everything was overpriced. And I just, my conscience wouldn't let me push something that I thought was overpriced. Okay. So I wasn't successful. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
And so I walked into the store, and Gene followed me in with, and I took one bottle with me, left the 29 in the Beetle. And this sweet little old lady, Emma Chittick, came around the counter to see what she could help me. She didn't know if I was a customer or what I was. And I handed her that bottle, didn't really know what to say because I hadn't thought through my script on the selling points. And the only thing I said to her is, "I have a product here I think you'd be interested in." And she took it in her hand and looked at it, stared at it for, I don't know, 10, 15 seconds.
Probably seemed like an eternity,
huh? It seemed like an eternity. She finally looked at me and said, "What's the price?" Well, I hadn't figured out the price. I knew our cost on the 30 bottles was about $1.05 per bottle at that time. And so I immediately threw out a number because I knew I had to say something or I'd really look stupid. So I said $1.15. That means it gave us $3 for 30 bottles and all those hours of filling those capsules. I didn't think about that at the time.
I can see why you didn't do well in real estate.
Yeah, that's right. She got out her little checkbook and said, "I'll take 6 of them." Gene went out the car to get 5 more of the bottles. She wrote out a check for, I think it was $9. And then she found a little space in the worst spot in her store to put these 6 bottles, way up at the top. And way in, kind of in the back, and I thought, that's not the best space, but I'm not going to argue with her. I got her check, and she put them there. Gene and I went out of the store just on cloud 9 because it was so easy to sell. I mean, to a couple of sentences, and I had my order and gave her the product. So we went to a grocery store next. We didn't really know what our market was at the time, and found the store manager way in the back up on above the coolers on a wooden floor, way back in the corner, went up to him. And I thought, you know, my last sales approach was so good, I'm going to use the same sales approach. So I said to him, and I handed him the bottle, just like I had with Emma, handed him the bottle and says, "I have a product here I think you'd be interested in." Now, remember, this is a grocery store. It's not a health food store.
Yeah.
It's a grocery store. And he took it in his hand and he looked at it. And he finally turned over and looked at me and said, "Why would I want these?"
Right.
I hadn't thought of that question. How am I going to answer that thing? And I said to him, "Well, let me tell you Gene's story." And Gene's sitting there. It was his story, and I'm telling his story. That was the oddest thing when I think back of. Why didn't I just have Gene tell the story? Probably because I thought Gene won't tell it in a way that'll sell the product.
Okay.
So I had to tell the story, kind of like what I've said here today. And he said, "Okay, very good. I'll take 144 bottles."
Oh, my.
I remember, grocery stores are used to big quantities. And I'm sitting, I've got 24 bottles left, minus the one that he had in his hand. And I said, "Would you settle on 24? And he said, "Okay, give me 24. That's the only time in my life I've ever talked somebody down in an order, not up. Usually try to get people to buy more. I try to get them to buy less. And so he found us a place, worst part in the store, it was next to the candy. And he put our 24 bottles
candy,
there.
Candy, cayenne pepper, I see those two going together.
Yeah, they really match, don't they? But again, I was so excited to get the order and get the check that I wasn't going to tell him I think there's better spots than
the
candy shelf. And we laughed. We were thrilled. We went home. We said, guys, got to get the family together and make some more product. And that was really exciting for everybody. Thinking, oh, no, runny eyes, runny nose, burning eyes, stained fingers is all that's going through everybody's minds. But we sat down and started to do it. Well, about a week later, we were still in the production of some more cayenne pepper capsules. Jean and I went down to the Emma Chittick's health food store, went in, didn't even see her, walked back to where our products were had been put. One of them was already gone.
It was gone.
There's only five left. And I said, somebody's buying our product. There must be a market for this stuff.
Even in the worst place in the store, somebody found it.
Somebody found it and bought it. And then we drove up to the grocery store and counted them. There's still 24 sitting there. We did that for every week for I don't know how long. It seems like it was months. Nothing was sold. And I finally said to Gene one time, we better stop going. He's going to ask for a refund.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have to give him a refund. And so we didn't go back anymore. And so then we just started to sell the product to stores. That was the retail. We had a retail vision at the time. You have to remember, back in 1972, there were only four or five multi-level marketing companies in the whole world, Amway being one. And so... You know, very few people knew what that model, that business model was.
Yeah, and I want to get into that in just a minute. But how long before you figured out that you needed to raise your price? Because you were doing this on a retail basis. But
it took me almost no time at all. I finally got thinking, we can't do all this hours and hours worth of labor for 10 cents a bottle. And so I raised the price to $1.60, which was a decent price for those days. And the quantities we were selling, it didn't give us a big fat profit, but it did give us enough. But we still never, as long as we were in filling capsules by hand, never paid anybody any money. We didn't pay ourselves a dime. We just wanted the money in there to accumulate and be able to expand the product line. Because remember, as we went around, visited more health food stores, every health food store that I ever went to sell them on our products, I sold. It took 2 seconds. They saw the need, grabbed it, and jumped on it.
Wow.
And it was literally the only need for growth was me to go to the health food stores and sell them. So we had to reinvest all of our money. It wasn't a lot, but reinvest all of it to keep it going.
So your main limit on resources was just your time and being able to make it to the stores.
Well, that's right. Just finding the stores. There weren't very many in Utah at that time. Health food stores weren't the phenomenon that they are now. You know, there wasn't a GNC and high health and some of those stores like we have now.
Right.
They're just mom-and-pop stores all over the country in limited quantities. So we expanded throughout Utah. I expanded the product line with other herbs. I knew that we couldn't be a one-product company.
Uh-huh.
I knew we'd get competition at some point, so I was trying to stay ahead of anybody jumping into the market by creating the demand and building and getting us into the slots instead of somebody else.
Right. So how long did you stay in that retail model before you finally said, there's this new potential way of being able to get this product out into the world?
Well, it was about 2 years. And you have to remember that I had been in the military, was not making any money. So I was the first full-time employee and I made $3,000 a month, and I knew I had to sell enough product to pay my salary or I wouldn't get paid.
It's a lot of pills.
It's a lot of pills, especially at $1.60 a bottle every month, just to cover my cost, not counting the cost to go out and sell more stores. So it was a big challenge and interesting. So there we are building our different product line, building our store, our sales, our limit, our inventory at the same time. And one of Gene's neighbors said to him one day, why don't you sell these things through multi-level? And, of course, Gene told me that, and I thought, multi-level, the only thing company I know is Amway, and I don't really know how they do it because I really have never looked at Amway very close. And so she helped us structure a marketing compensation plan, patterned it after Amway's plan.
Okay.
And she said, I've got a friend that likes to do multi-level. He's in California. His name's Deloy. Let me get him up here, and I'll bet he'll be your lead salesperson or distributor that'll get this thing going for you. So we had our retail outlet with one label or business, and now we had our multi-level marketing business with a different label. Now my inventory levels had to be doubled.
Okay, yeah.
So we worked on getting those doubled, and Deloitte came along one day and says, yeah, I like this, and we gave him a little tour of our back of the grocery store warehouse at the time. And and by the way, the filling capsules by hand only lasted a few months. That was a killer. And we found a machine that we could rent from the distributor of the capsules that we could fill them automatically, and that's what we did.
Right.
So Gene became that operator. I was running the business. And Gene was part-time. He was a school teacher. So anyway, Deloitte shows up and says, you know what? I can make this work. And he placed a big, huge order that we put in the trunk of his car. It was $1,000 worth of product.
That's a lot of product back then.
Oh, my gosh. In those days, nobody knew what herbs and capsules were. There was a whole marketing thing was different than it is today. You'd say to people, they'd say, what business you're in? Well, I'm in the herb business. And they say, oh, you mean spice business.
Okay.
No, I don't mean spice business, the herb business. And then you'd have the big explanation. And now that's whole different. You can say herbs and people understand there's spices and there's herbs, but not back then. So anyway, Deloitte filled his trunk, $1,000, drove off to California. And as Gene and I watched him drive off, I said to Gene, well, we'll never see him again. I thought he had so much product, he'd get discouraged and wouldn't try to make it work. Well, about one day after he got home, and it took about a long day to drive home to where he lived, 2 a.m., I get a phone call in the middle of the night. Of course, immediately think, who died?
Right, yeah, because you don't get calls in the middle of the night unless it's bad,
unless
usually.
It's bad news. So I pick up the phone. It's Deloitte, all excited on the other line. He says, Ken, I had my first herb meeting. And first thing in the morning, I want you to duplicate the order I took down here, and I'll mail you a check first thing in the morning and get it on the Greyhound bus on its way down here. UPS wasn't in Utah at the time. And I about dropped the phone on the floor when
wow.
he said duplicate the order. It's been one day since he got home, and he needs a duplicate. And I said, how are you doing this, Deloitte? He says, well, I had a chicken coop in my backyard, and I cleaned it out and put the meeting room out there. I thought, wow, that's an interesting approach to selling people. And
I can't imagine having a meeting in a chicken coop because they're smelly.
They're smelly. I can't either, but it worked for him, whatever he did.
Okay.
He must have spent a lot of hours cleaning that sucker out.
No kidding.
And so he, you know, every couple of nights after that, I'd get a call. It was always at 2 a.m. About the time he'd wrap up his business, sell the product, and he'd need more.
Now that's why.
And it just went on and on and on for weeks. And he's building his business down in California. And so that's how we really got into MLM. And the MLM business got to where it was swamping the retail business.
Okay.
And I got so much screaming from the distributors, get out of the retail business, you're competing with us, that I've made a few bad business decisions in my life. This was the worst one.
Why?
One of the worst.
Why is it?
Because I withdrew our products from the health food stores, and all I did is create a vacuum that other companies started up and stepped into. They're clamoring for encapsulated herbs. They can't get them from Nature Sunshine products anymore. So I'm making them. I'll sell them to you. And so I had created my own competition by withdrawing from that market.
Okay.
So that was a mistake. I could have controlled both markets if I stayed in both and kept out competition for a long time. But I didn't. That was a mistake. So we focused on MLM. It started to grow, continued to grow and explode, and it was just took off from there.
Wow. Okay. So that's really how you became known as the father of herbal encapsulation.
I was never called that at that time. That name came about later.
Okay.
When there were a lot of companies out there and distributors wanted to identify me of who I was, that I'm the one that it wasn't my idea to put herbs in capsules. It was the family's member of the family.
Right, yeah.
But I'm the one that made it happen from a business standpoint. And so I got that name, Father of Encapsulated Herbs. So that came back about, you know, in the 80s, mid-80s, that name.
Okay.
Which stuck with me.
Okay, yeah, because it's still with you today.
Yeah.
And people look at you, they look at you as a legend in the industry, and some of them don't know that story. And so many of the people listening to this will be their first introduction to some of that history that you have.
Yeah. No, and it's interesting. The only competition we had back in those days were the hippies filling capsules by hand, but they weren't doing it commercially. We were the first to do it commercially, and then other competitors came along when they saw the success that we were having. So we were the first. We created a market there. We were one of the first MLM companies on top of nutritional companies to put herbs in capsules.
Right.
Up until then, it was either mostly tablets. The capsules that were used, they usually were vitamins, not herbs.
Okay.
So it just created a whole new genre that grew up. And a lot of the employees over the years went out and started their own business. So you look at our county, Utah County, where we were in, there's all kinds of MLM companies, nutritional companies in this valley, which many of the people have worked for me either in that company or my second company that have gone off on their own to create their own business after having learned it.
Wow. That's incredible. So you've got a big footprint as far as the influence that you've had over this industry.
Well, I've never looked at it that way. I've just always felt I was blessed to be able to provide for my family. That's how it started. It became a mission. It's about 6 months after the MLM started when I saw what the products were doing for individuals' health.
What kind of stories were coming back to you?
Well, the one that really struck me the most and sank deep into my heart was we had kind of a testimony meeting with some of their distributors, and probably 20 or 30 of them. We were in this kind of, I'll call it a gymnasium with a podium in the front. And everybody was getting up one at a time and saying what the products were doing for them and some of the people they were sharing them with. And I remember this little old lady got up there, and she's told her story. She said, I had cancer. And she said, I went to the doctor, and the doctor says, we've done everything we can for you. There's nothing more we can do. Just go home and prepare for death. She says, I went home to die. And then along came these products. I started to take the products, and I stand here today cancer-free.
Wow.
And I heard that, and I thought, you know, this isn't just about money. Yes, you want to provide for your family. You want to make money so you can grow the business and do things. But this is about people's lives and what nutritional things can do for the body. The body, when you feed the proper nutrition to the body, it's amazing what it can do for itself. And that's obviously what happened to this lady. Since then, I've heard so many people that have had miraculous health improvements from things that you'd think, why didn't they die? You know, and everything in between. And so I've seen the miracles that come from proper nutrition going into the body. We get starved of good nutrition. Our bodies get sick, get diseases sometimes. And sometimes these nutritional things that go into the body, if it's what the body needs, it can take and repair itself.
Right.
The herbs, the vitamins that we take never cure anything. It's the body that takes care of itself. But you have to give it the ammunition to be able to do that, if it can do that. Sometimes it can't.
Right. So you moved out of Nature Sunshine along the way, and
I need to explain that quickly because I would have been there probably my whole life. The company was growing. We were doing well. We were learning, having a good time, making a good income, seeing people's lives changed. But one day, in the whole process, I told you how people didn't know what herbs were. We realized we had to educate the public. So we started to publish health books. Would explain herbs and things. And then we also started a magazine called The Herbalist Magazine.
Okay.
That later its names, we changed the name to New Health because we wanted it to be beyond just herbs. But needless to say, these were the vehicles that educated our distributors and they could use as tools to understand and train other people. And so through a variety of business things, I ended up with 100% of that magazine. And so I couldn't run both the magazine as a separate company and Nature Sunshine. I chose to run Nature Sunshine and hire a magazine book expert to run that business for me.
Uh-huh.
He ran it, but he ran it to the ground.
Wrong direction, huh?
Every month my losses were bigger in that business. And I was feeding it out of my pocket. I wasn't making a huge sum of money. And I finally, the last month that he ran it, he lost me $40,000, which was $10,000 more than the previous month. And I'm saying next month it's going to be $50,000, it might be $60,000 loss. I'm bankrupt.
That's a lot of money.
And it was for me especially. And he was in New York trying to sell some books. And I called him up and said, you're fired. Don't come back. He was a New Yorker. And I never saw him or talked to him after that. And so I literally had to step out of Nature Sunshine in a 24-hour period and go run the magazine myself.
Just to go rescue
That's why I left. Took me a couple of years to rescue it and get it to break even. Took it from a small circulation of 5,000 or 10,000 a month to over 100,000, pushing 150,000 per month shortly after I left. And so it was doing well, but it was the dog chasing its own tail. The higher the circulation, the more money you needed. You couldn't get more money unless you had higher circulation so you could sell more advertising. So it was a crazy business, probably one of the hardest businesses I've ever run to get on top of it. But I got it to where it's making money, and I literally gave the magazine, the business away, to my main salesman.
Okay.
And set up a contract that it would pay for itself, and I just wanted my investment back. It'd take, you know, 2 or 3 years, I can't remember now, to get my investment back. And then he'd be a full owner of it. Well, about 6 months later, I didn't get my check. And I knew he was doing something wrong because it should have been making enough money to send me my check. So I went into him. His name was Bill. And I said, Bill, I know you're losing money, or you would have sent me my check. So let me tell you what you have to do to make it profitable again and continue paying me so you can own this. You have to do a couple of things. Number one, lower everybody's salary 10%, starting with you. And I suggest you lower yours by 20%.
How'd that go over?
None of it went over, actually. He didn't do anything I told him. And then I said, you've got to lower your printing bill by 10% by going to a little bit cheaper paper. No, it's not going to affect anybody. You just save some money on the printing costs. Those two things will put you in the black again. If you do that, you can send me my check. He never sent me my check. I didn't want the business back. I was just enjoying my life. And he just gradually took it into bankruptcy because he didn't do what I told him to do.
That's too bad.
And I was burned out. I didn't want the business back. I would have done things much different today. That was mistake number two, I think. Not taking it back.
Okay. Interesting. So you started later on, and without going into necessarily all the details, because we want to keep this episode fairly short, but you ended up starting Enrich International.
Yeah, I'd been out of the business for a few years doing other things. And Jack Richardson, who I had recruited into Nature Sunshine, became the biggest distributor sometime after Deloitte had got things going. Probably 12 months later, was a good friend of mine. And he said, Ken, Nature Sunshine, they're making some decisions that I think they're putting themselves in jeopardy. I want you to start another company. I didn't want to start another one from scratch, but I said, well, I'll look into it, Jack. And I talked to another business acquaintance of mine, his name is Dave. And Dave says, you know, Nature's Labs, who was started towards the time I left Nature Sunshine as a competitor of ours, he says, I've heard they're for sale. And they happen to have their office about half a block down the road. And so I thought, well, you know, if I could buy a business, I already got the products, I don't have to start from scratch, maybe I could get back into the business. So I went down to their little office they had, knocked on the door. And the guy's name was Ron, and I knew Ron very well. He'd been my competitor a few years before. A good guy, but trying to compete with me. And I said, Ron, and he invited me in. We sat down. I said, Ron, I heard that you want to sell your business. He said, no, I don't want to sell it. But since you're here, let's talk about it. So in about 10 or 15 minutes, he and I had negotiated a deal, and I walked out owning his business. And
when he didn't want to sell.
No, when he didn't want to sell and hadn't planned it. I don't know where Dave got his idea he wanted to sell, but it was all these serendipitous things that happen in life where I call it the invisible hand of God, where he's leading you from one thing to another that he wants you to do. And that was one of the times, a very strong time. And So I didn't have the $20,000 I had to pay him. And so I had to go down to the bank. I'd been a founder of a bank, and I went down. I wasn't an owner anymore. And borrowed $20,000, went back, gave it to Ron, and I owned his business.
Wow.
And wasn't doing very much at the time, but it was had the foundation of what I needed for Nature, for Enrich International to make it grow. Dave, who had sent me there, I became my partner. I let him have part of the company, a minority position, because it had been his idea to do that. And he was the first employee after I bought it because I was doing other things for a while. So that's how that began. It started to grow slowly, but it started to grow.
Wow. So your second company, and in an industry that is expanding and growing, and you actually helped create that industry, at least in Utah, that, since there were really no other companies that were doing it. There were only, what, six or so companies in the whole world that were even doing it.
Well, by 1985, when we did this, there were dozens of them. We weren't alone. One of the big things that's changed in the industry is we started Nature Sunshine, as I said, for $1,050. This company actually cost me $25,000 to get started, the $20,000 to buy it and $5,000 to operate, I guess, is the amount. And so, but now to start a business in this market, it's millions of dollars.
Wow.
My third company, we'll talk about, I'm sure, cost millions to get it going. So it's not cheap to start in an industry that was so cheap 45 years ago to get into.
Right.
Because there was no industry at that time, basically.
Wow. So you ended up getting out of Enrich International after building that up to quite a successful company.
Well, the day I bought it, it was doing $10,000 a month. The day I sold it, 1997, 12 years later, sold controlling interest, it was doing $10 million a month.
Wow.
So it went from $10,000 to $10 million. Still in a time period where MLM was still somewhat hard to build and no overnight miracles happening at that time. And those are the worst kind to join anyway, overnight miracles, because they don't survive. So 1997, I sold controlling interest. 3 years later, I sold the rest of my stock. And I was just into business at that time.
Did you think you were done with the MLM at that point?
I thought I was fine. I thought it was final. I've done it twice. I don't need to do it again. I'm enjoying what I'm doing. There's a lot of pressure in MLM, a lot of pressure. Most people can't take the pressure and stay under it because it's constant. It's 24/7. And so a lot of people fail just because they can't handle that pressure, let alone the business. Because you've got all the people you're dealing with, plus the business side of the business. Most businesses, you just have the business side to deal with, and few people. That's mainly your few employees you might have.
Maybe a couple of clients along the way. But there's a lot of travel involved, too.
There's always travel, and it's more so now probably than ever before. You're going international. Enrich International only got into a half a dozen countries while I still was there. So it was just international wasn't as big a thing then as it has become. Your international markets can be your biggest, and you have to, and that takes a lot of travel, and you've got to be young to do that and hold up under that strain.
Yeah. So tell about your current company that you got involved in.
So I got out of Enrich in 2000, and about 4 years later, a friend of mine who had come in as a CFO when I sold, he said, Ken, he called me up, I've got a business proposal memorandum I'd like you to take a look at. Well, first of all, his name was Dave, too. I said, first of all, I'm thinking it's got to be MLM or he wouldn't be calling me up. And number two, he wants my money because he doesn't have any. Those are the two reasons he wants to see me. And anyone else, if I'd known they were calling about an MLM, I wasn't interested. And so he came over to my office. I said, Dave, you got 30 minutes. You give me your pitch in 30 minutes. And I had told one of my employees that worked for me, is actually my cousin, and I said to him, you know, I'm going to give Dave 30 minutes, then I'm going to say no thanks, goodbye. And so I went and sat down with Dave, and he had this big stack of papers, and I thought, I hope he doesn't give me that memorandum to read. I don't want to read a memorandum. You know, I'm not interested. And he didn't. But he did say this, can we play this video that I've got from the Discovery Channel about this tree called the Moringa tree?
Had you heard of it at that time?
No, I'd never heard of it. And I thought, well, that's sure better than reading through 30 or 40 pages of a memorandum. So he played it. And as he was playing that, I saw the miracles. It's called the Miracle Tree. I saw the miracles that was happening in Africa. It was filmed in Africa with Moringa. And the more it was played, the more I knew I had to be involved, although I didn't want to run the company. And by the time, it's almost like having a spiritual experience. I felt this is a product. A couple of things. It replaces 200 or 300 products that I used to sell.
Wow.
Nutritionally. And I feel like God wants it all over the world, all of his children, because it'll benefit their health. And so by the time that video was through playing, I said, Dave, I'll put the money in if you'll run the company. He wanted controlling interest. I said, no, if I'm putting the money in, I've got control. And which we structured and did, and we started down the road of putting together the product, because right now it's only a concept right then. And that was tough, taking basically a tree and turning it into a drink. It wasn't a fruit. It was a tree. And then we had to find out through research what the formula is to get all of the variation components of that carried the nutrition together so you maximize the nutrition. Can't just get it from the leaves. You just can't get it from the fruit. You just can't get it from the fruit cake because it's not all there. So you've got to maximize everything. How do you put it together to maximize? And that took us some time. Had to hire a guy in California that was a formulator and say, turn this into a drink that's palatable. I mean, it's got to not only be nutritious, people have got to be able to swallow that sucker, you know. And if we'd ever really thought how hard it would be to take a tree and turn it into a drink, I think we would have been discouraged and not gone down that path.
Why didn't you try to encapsulate it?
Probably because juice companies were the big things at the time. People were going to juice and away from capsules to a certain degree.
Okay.
And so we wanted to be in the mainstream of what people wanted. They're tired of taking a fistful of capsules. So give me a drink.
Okay.
And so that's why we went that direction. And so this formulator, he went through about 132 attempts to turn it into a drink, failed at every one of them, went home discouraged one night, and told his wife he's not going to finish. He can't do it. And his wife shook her finger at him and said, you promised those two boys, she called us boys, although we're older, I'm old, certainly older than she was, you promised those two boys that you would get them a product. Now, you get back to your lab and make it work. So he next day went back to his lab. Another 11 attempts, he finally made it work and got something that worked. And
so did you taste these along the way as you were going?
Not until he finally got something he was satisfied with. I had to make a lot of adjustments from there because the flavor wasn't good. It just, you know, it was hard. The funny part of it is we never thought that it would be impossible to turn a tree into a drink. I mean, if we had ever thought that, we'd have got discouraged like he did and quit, but we didn't. That's one of those invisible hands of God that just keeps you going, knowing that the end from the beginning, and we didn't. I didn't think it was impossible, yet it became possible.
Wow.
It kept going.
Well, that's amazing that you just found that tenacity to just say, you know what? No, we're going to find a way to get this so that it can be in a new form rather than the one that I'm used to doing in the past, and we're just going to find a way to do it.
Yeah, then we wanted to put them in cans so they looked like a soda pop can and things, which was different. No one had been doing that at that time in our nutritional. They put them in bottles, and we put ours into a can. And that's how we really began ZG International.
Wow. And so that's over 10 years ago now.
Yeah, that's we actually started research at the end of 2004. And it launched unofficially about right this next spring, 2005. Official launch came after that.
So, yeah, you guys just celebrated last year your 10-year anniversary mm-hmm. of being in the marketplace.
Yeah, well, from our official launch, yeah.
Well, congratulations. It is proved to be quite a success. Now, there's an interesting phenomenon that's been going on, and maybe talk a little bit about some of the acquisitions that ZJ has actually gone through over the last few months.
Well, the marketplace is different right now. There's almost a consolidation taking place. There's a lot of mid-sized to smaller companies that are failing. It's a harder market than it was. We had one company come to us that was on the verge of bankruptcy. They wanted to save the company for their distributors and for their some of the people they owed money to. And so we basically, they had liens on all of their inventory, and we went through the process of out of foreclosure on their inventory, their assets, we bought it.
Okay.
And brought those people on board. Then we had another company, which a lot of people have heard about, which is Zangle. Kind of the same thing happened there. They were probably a week away from shutting their doors, totally out of money, came to us, and we bought their assets, and in the process saved their distributor for us, and were able to move on with it. So more things like that seem to be happening in the industry. We've been approached by two or three other companies that we haven't been in a position to do anything with up to this point, and may not do anything with them. But so that's an interesting phenomenon. And what's interesting about both of those companies, those people, the key people in those companies used to work for me. And so talking to some of them, they feel like they're coming home. It's been a big full circle. I trained them, taught them. They went out on their own through a couple of different companies, started new companies, became successful. And now because that company's failing, they're coming back to their home, so to speak, which is, I hadn't thought about that at the time. They actually brought that up. We're coming home. And it's just interesting how things go full circle if you do things right and you treat people right over time and fairly.
Well, and you do have a good reputation for that out there in the industry.
Well, that's all you have in life is your reputation. If you lose that, what have you accomplished with your life? You know, you have to be fair and honest with people in everything you do. If you do, the blessings will come back. Cast your bread upon the waters and it comes back multiplied. You know, if you try to be dishonest to people and do bad things and try to get away with things, it doesn't work out long term. You get in trouble. And so you have to be honest and fair and care about other people as well as yourself. Always treat the other people better first.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed that episode. To find out more about what Ken does, please visit his website at kenbrailsford.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review it. By doing so, that will enable us to bring more and greater content to you with each and every episode. Thanks for listening.